This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 11th of February, 2022. Quite a lot of fireworks across the market yesterday on a couple of developments and all kinds of developments yesterday, really. But the key headline was that U.S. CPI number, although ironically, it wasn't necessarily that was the trigger of some of the further follow-on market action. So just briefly put, we had U.S. January CPI data out much hotter than expected, the month-on-month beating both on the headline and at the core at 0.6% for both of those month-on-month, and then the year-on-year higher than expected at 7.5% headline and 6% at the core. That latter number is the first time we've got one of these new 40-year highs in inflation. There was a brief period in the early 90s where it was actually slightly higher than the December number, but with this January print, we're officially at these new 40-year highs as the Fed continues the last little residual bit of quantitative easing and has not yet hiked rates. And then following on to that, we got an appearance by Bullard, some pretty forceful language there on the need to hike rates, saying he'd like to see 100 basis points of hiking in the bag by 1st of July. That would be basically four rate hikes worth of hiking over three meetings. So that would mean one of those hikes would have to be 50 basis points. And then he even mentioned and brought into the sort of the conversation the idea of an intermeeting emergency hike. So this is being thrown around. You're seeing a lot of it in the commentary from various sources as well, the risk that the Fed could move, maybe even as soon as today, to hike rates to get ahead of this curve, or at least try to get onto the curve. It needs to chase inflation is the feeling here, and do something to have any sense of credibility, which it is rapidly losing or has maybe irretrievably lost. So I'll go through a little bit the intraday, how this developed, because it was kind of interesting how this developed intraday. But Peter, any headline thoughts? And just briefly on the technical side, of course, that 61.8% retracement, S&P holding, the NASDAQ 100, 200-day moving average holding in the U.S., and then an ugly sell-off developing. Proper and I would say healthy fear of the Fed here is the headline.
Yeah, you have put in the S&P 500. I at this point in time, I prefer looking at the NASDAQ. I think the NASDAQ is the leading instrument here in equities, because that's really where the most sensitivity to interest rates and rate policy is being expressed. And you also saw that in our theme baskets yesterday. You can see that the worst performers, the most heavy bags this year, were also on the decline. Interestingly enough, you had financial trading firms slipping a little bit, which was odd, but I don't think that is really a signal. I think that's mostly noise. And then you also had commodities and EM again. So this is really that interesting, divergence here, that EM is so strong versus US equities, and you have that commodity market that is just bit. And before I let the scene to you, John, my thinking just quickly on inflation, what's happening is that I think that this inflation shock will cause people, policymakers and companies to make a lot of mistakes, and there'll be price controls, etc. If the thinking is that we need to engineer a recession to cool down inflation and thereby we need to hike rates to cool it off, I think to some extent it might as a first derivative be a right assessment. But I think the issue with that is that inflation this time around is not driven from the demand side, which has been the case since the early 1980s. This is driven by constraints on the physical economy from the supply side. So even if you engineer a recession and you cool off inflation a little bit, you haven't solved the structural issues on the supply side. And you can only be in a recession for so long before the Fed, with their oil mandate, have to get us back into economic growth. And then as soon as you put the economy back into growth mode, the same problems on the supply side will reemerge, and then you'll have inflation coming back again, a total deja vu or echo from the 1970s. I mean, that's my thinking right now, and I could be totally changing my view in three months from now, but that's how I look at it.
Yeah, and then you mentioned commodities performing well, but that was not the case yesterday. Ola, we need to bring you into the conversation, because interesting to see when we get this extreme move, which is what we saw in terms of what the Fed might do already this year. It's very front loaded here, by the way. The whole U.S. yield curve did lift, but it lifted much more at the very front end here with these expectations after Bullard's rhetoric, and we saw a pretty big whack to the oil price. Was that the case across pretty much across the commodity space as well?
Well, it looks that way, John. If you look at slide five, I just put in the last couple of days for commodity performance. And what we are looking at this stage is the first weekly setback in the Bloomberg Commodity Index since mid-December. It is the energy sector primarily driving it. But I think also we saw a couple of high flyers earlier in the week. Copper was up quite a bit. Yesterday it's now down 3%. We got soybeans also rallying strongly recently on tight supply. So some of these markets where the focus has been on tight supply is just giving back some of those strong gains. And it is, as Peter mentioned, that the tight supply is not going to go away. But in the short term, until we get some more clarity, the market will start to potentially just be a little bit worried about the economic outlook as being signaled through these very flattening yield curves that we're seeing. Because flattening yield curves, even before they started hiking, is indicating the market's concern that this will lead to it has to lead to an economic slowdown. That's the only way you can get the inflation under control. And the market is, commodity space is responding to that. So potentially just slowing the growth we've seen in prices recently, but the market will trade this from a bit of a cautionary view. And just taking that one step further, just on slide six, I put in the gold market. We talked a lot about it, but I think we continue to see this phenomenal performance despite the big jump we're seeing in US real yields. You can really see this here on the slide with the red line being the real yields inverted, where now we're now up 70 basis points since the start of the year, and gold is trading up on the year at the same time. And so I think increasingly gold is just basically being used as a hedge against central banks failing to control inflation. And you can see it's quite a tall order that if you look at forward inflation swaps, the kind of levels that are priced in and compared to where inflation is today. So I think that's one of the reasons why we continue to see a bit in the gold market, even though real yields are rising quite strongly.
Yeah, and talking about the scenario of an emergency Fed rate hike, I was having a bit of a loud argument actually with our CIO, Stan Jakobsen, about when was the last time the Fed did this. And of course, we've seen intermeeting moves in these panic phases of monetary policy easing, whether it's over the pandemic, whether it was during the global financial crisis. If I recall, the one in 2001 from Greenspan was also an intermeeting move to chop rates because it was clear the economy was weakening and equity markets were correcting badly. But we were scrambling back for history to find the last intermeeting rate hike, and the best we could come up was 1994. So we may be wrong there, but that's the kind of perspective we're talking about here. The last time we saw a 50 basis point move was back in 2000. The last time we saw an intermeeting tightening was, as far as we know so far, 1994, when there's a pretty brutal a round of tightening because of the concerns about inflation at that time. Of course, there was some further back in history in the 80s and especially the late 70s with Volcker. Okay, let's take a little bit. It's just, it was really curious how this unfolded yesterday. I mentioned yesterday, I thought the intriguing scenario would be just a slightly weaker US CPI read or something that would just test the markets, especially the equity markets, conviction around those key trigger levels, resistance levels that we're trying to trade up into yesterday. Instead, we got the hot number. And yet, the initial reaction was quite interesting, pretty straightforward. You go to look at it on slide three, by the way. A little bit of a confusing chart. It's an intraday chart of the September 2022, so this year's Eurodollar short-term interest rate future, a reflection of where the Fed is priced to move. So it's dropping to price in more Fed rate hikes, and quite sharply so. And then equities, we go risk off. The dollar tried to rally a bit. And then those things reversed. The pricing stayed there for the Fed to hike a bit more, but the equity market tried to rally and the dollar was selling off and actually sold off to new lows after the release of this CPI. I guess the logic there being, if there is any, that the Fed is going to remain behind the curve and never really catch up to inflation, even if it is going to hike a bit more. But instead, we saw Bullard bringing in the artillery with these comments, and I've pulled the money quote, if you will, out of what he said yesterday. Not only the 100 basis points of hikes he thought was needed before July, you can see that's over just three meetings, but saying and bringing into the conversation this idea of the intermeeting move. And the quote is, "There was a time when the committee would have reacted to something like this, to having a meeting right now and doing 25 basis points right now. I think we should be nimble and considering that kind of thing." So I think we should, as market participants, be aware that the risk is afoot right now that the Fed moves today, over the weekend, or Monday. If it doesn't move by mid next week, perhaps it doesn't move until some further data release or something else. But that, I think that is the type of time frame we may be talking about. And you can see in the interest rate probabilities that we've priced in, almost the full 50 basis points move there at the March meeting. He also mentioned, he favored tightening, quantitative tightening, so reducing the balance sheet already in the second quarter of this year. And it was the Bullard comments that really just finally turned everything around, further spiked Fed expectations, and then spooked risk sentiment. Now, a bit of a mouthful to take you through here, because there was a lot of other things afoot yesterday, including the Bank of Japan out prior to the U.S. CPI release, indicating that it is doubling down, or at least it is going to enforce its yield curve control policy, under which it keeps a yield cap on the 10-year JGB, the Japanese government bond, at 25 basis points. This announcement came after, as we mentioned in a previous podcast this week, that the rate on that yield, or the yield on that bond benchmark, had reached 23 basis points. And they said on Monday they'll be doing unlimited purchases to enforce that yield cap. This saw the yen sharply weaker. It's quite interesting, however, to see how in the reaction to the U.S. CPI and Bullard rhetoric, with the vicious yield curve flattening and some of those commodity prices coming off, I think is part of it, that the yen has actually strengthened quite a bit in the crosses. I pulled out Aussie yen on slide 40 so you can see the dynamic there from the intraday spike higher to the big move lower today. And actually, as before we walked in there, we saw the Japanese yen stronger still. On the opposite side, we saw the Riksbank very dovish, very clueless. They're bringing forward their rate liftoff timeframe to the second half of 2024, if you can believe that, rather than Q4 of 2024. They're maintaining their QE. The Swedish krona, of course, sold off and was doing quite poorly. But then after all these other developments, it really got trashed as it deserved to be after this meeting, and as the Swedish krona is very sensitive to risk sentiment. So it was at the bottom of the barrel yesterday for sure. To me, it's quite interesting. The dollar has strengthened, but I think the strengthening is very modest relative to what the market is pricing here. I wouldn't be surprised to see another surge if we do see this intermeeting move from the Fed. But look at where we are on Fed expectations, 7 rate hikes priced in, and the dollar manages maybe 40, 50 pips versus the euro relative to basically where it closed the previous day. So
is that a sign that the that the FX market and the bond market is not in agreement of what will happen? Is that how you interpret it?
No, I interpret it as this is what's priced in the bond market, in the interest rate market, and yet the dollar is where it is. So the dollar is the market is essentially saying we still see, despite what the Fed is going to do, that these real yields really are going to stink for the US dollar. There's also the current account considerations and otherwise. So the Fed is going to have to move that much more on the quantitative tightening side and or the rate hike side to bring that credibility about. And as well with the vicious yield curve flattening, you're having the market predicting. I mean, we saw a huge additional flattening yesterday. I don't have the numbers in front of me. It was a big move. We did see new highs in the U.S. 10-year above 200 basis points, but it flattened viciously. And that is, of course, the market, not of course, but it is the market saying this economy is really going to tank on this Fed, which has been forced onto the warpath due to this inflationary outcome.
Do you think this flattening of the yield curve is also something that the Fed is looking at? Because it has been a pretty reliable indicator of incoming recession. So they must be looking at this and saying, what are we going to do here? Because the Fed can control the short end of the yield curve, but the long end, that has always been the take from Ben Bernanke, the former Fed chairman, that, you know, out of the 7, 8, and 10 year and beyond, I mean, that's market pricing, not so much the Fed. But
yes, but they have a political mandate to get this inflation under control at all costs. As well, the yield curve operates as we talked about yesterday, I talked about it on my FX market update yesterday. There's a considerable lag from the time it actually inverts, historically anyway, if you're looking at the twos versus tens, for example, and we'll put that actually up on slide 5. There's various bits of the yield curve, the slope, and you can see that flattening. There's a lag of anything from a year to 18 plus months from the time it actually inverts to when you're talking about a recession. So let's say we're a couple months from inversion, and then beyond that, it could be another year plus, or our rates so low that we never actually reach a proper inversion, as has been the case in the whole modern history of Japan, when they've never really inverted because their whole yield curve was so low to begin with. Anyway, a long spiel there. I guess, you know, just to bring into awareness, we're not calling a Fed rate hike here intermeeting. It's a risk. It's afoot. It's out there. Be prepared for it is the main message we have here. Okay, let's go to earnings. I guess, I don't know if you have a whole lot to wrap up from yesterday. Obviously, markets are more moving to the driver as the interest rate market here, but I guess not much in focus today.
No, it's as a ride. Sorry for that. Boring day on earnings. We have Enbridge and the Dominion Energy, probably the two most important to watch, but there will be no new news there from the energy sector. I've updated the net profit margin in percentage on a quarterly basis there with the newest numbers, and it's increasingly looking more and more ugly for the S&P 500 and NASDAQ 100 and US companies. And then I just pulled out, just to reiterate, so I think these comments from the Siemens CEO yesterday, some supply chain issues may drag into 2023. This world is still wildly out of balance, and that situation will continue. And I think a lot of it that needs to be unlocked or changed is the Chinese government's policy on COVID-19. I think it's still causing a lot of disruptions in global supply chains, and potentially we won't get a policy change until we get on the other side of the party Congress in October.
All right. Now let's look at what the calendar has to offer today. Another interesting data point up today, I think, that could further encourage or prompt the Fed to do something. And that is the February preliminary University of Michigan sentiment, and not just the sentiment itself, which is in the dumps. So a lot of that on people's wages and how far they are going, but also on the inflation expectations and whether these are reaching new highs for the cycle above 3% and starting to stick above there. This a big development because it is part of the Fed's inflation expectations inputs. We also have the Russian Central Bank up, expected to hike another 100 basis points. A couple of commodity reports. I don't know if you want to discuss those, if those are going to be in focus today.
Yeah, well, the IEA's monthly oil market report, I think, will be watched. We've had earlier this week both the EIA and OPEC reporting, coming out with their reports, but the market will obviously be looking for any views from the IEA on what we talked about here with this rate hike cycle and potential impact on demand going forward, and also whether they have some comments on the Iran situation, and that is. The main reason why oil is trading lower this week, because these discussions are still ongoing, and if we do have a breakthrough, then we could see increased supplies from Iran, also helping to alleviate some of the tightness we're seeing currently. So that could be an interesting report coming out.
All right, and then you can see the other bits and pieces we have there on slide 8. Bring out a couple of them as well on Wednesday. One of the key inflationary benchmarks globally, the Chinese PPI for January. Also, the U.S. January retail sales, I think it's an interesting one to track after some interesting data on that front in December. Also, the U.S. FOMC minutes, which are going to look increasingly stale, especially if the Fed comes out with something big and in a surprising way in coming days. And then a couple of voters out speaking next week as well, one of those being Bullard, who triggered a lot of what happened yesterday, as mentioned. All right. More than ever, you respect the potential for volatility. Keep your eye on the rates markets as an important input to your perspective here. It is really in the driver's seat of what's going on. And this has set considerable further energy afoot, this move and this adjustment we've had to incorporate since yesterday. Respect that. Respect your risk levels. Be careful out there. Have a great weekend. And we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at @SaxoMarketCall or by email marketcall@saxobank.com.